This is the Bulletproof Selling Podcast, and I'm Sean Rhodes, author of Bulletproof Selling, a guide for systemizing sales for the battlefield of business. Across more than 24 countries, I've studied men and women who refused to use hope as their sales strategy. We're here to replace hope with certainty, close more business, and ensure that your sales are bulletproof. Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Bulletproof Selling. My name is Sean Rhodes, the Chief Sales Sergeant of Bulletproof Selling and author of the book Bulletproof Selling, a guide for systemizing sales on the battlefield of business. And here at Bulletproof Selling, we believe in one thing above all others, and that is that hope is not a sales strategy. Hope was not a strategy across all of the combat missions that I was able to participate in with the U.S. Marines as an embedded journalist and war correspondent, someone that was paid to be there, to serve there, to study what the highest performing teams in the military were doing. I noticed these men and women didn't rely on hope. They were able to replace it with something that allowed them to go into dangerous situations, life and death situations, and be able to perform at a high level. And when I got into the field of sales, I realized for myself and all the other salespeople around me, we were pretty much living on hope in a dream. And the results spoke for themselves. It was a revenue roller coaster. We were waiting for prospects to get back to us. We didn't have the things that those military service men and women were able to rely on to keep them going, to keep them performing at a high level. And that was that we were able to recognize, one, hope is not a strategy. We've got to replace it with something. What do we replace it with? Well, that's what we're here at Bulletproof Selling to help you with your sales strategy, with your process, and with the thing that replaces hope, and that's systems. So over the last 100 episodes or so, we've been able to interview some of the top performing salespeople in the world, best-selling authors, Hall of Fame speakers, folks that are out there leading sales teams, folks that started their careers going door to door or smiling and dialing on the phone, and were able to build their sales teams, their organizations up to a point where they were then able to not have to rely on hope, where they were able to bring in something that allowed them to know with certainty that this process, this system is going to get me better results than if I'm just showing up hoping that I remember what to say, hoping that the podcast that I listened to or that book that I read would come back to me at that magically right moment in the sales call. So with these guests that we have every single episode, we've been able to build sales systems that you can then use no matter the size of your team or the size of your goals. Now, across all of the salespeople that I've been able to speak with, it's really fascinating to find out where they got their start in sales. So if you're a lot like me, you probably started your sales career in a very non-prestigious position where you were sitting in a cubicle smiling and dialing, or you were out there beating feet on the street, hoping that you would run into the right people. Well, our guest today got his start in one of the oldest ways that we all used to get our start in sales, which was going door to door selling stuff. Now, if you can do that and get doors slammed in your face, get hung up on again and again and again, because you have to learn eventually how to define your value proposition to keep people engaged in a conversation, that doesn't come from hope and a prayer. It comes from having a system. So without further ado, I'm really excited to talk to this guy today because he's got, one, that background, which I always learn something from, and he's been able to take that and build a team under him that is helping some of the largest organizations on the planet develop their sales process. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to welcome to Bulletproof Selling, Mr. Steve Haru. Steve, welcome, sir, to Bulletproof Selling.
Hey, man, how's it going, Sean? Pleasure to be on. Of course, thank you so much for all you've done for us and our country. And we have some similar conversation around the Marine Corps and one of my staff. So we'll get into that too. But thanks on behalf of all of us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, sir. It's my pleasure and my honor to be able to actually study what these teams were doing, because it has helped me out immeasurably in my sales career and through Bulletproof Selling, of course, to be able to reach all these wonderful folks watching and listening to us. Not here to learn about me, though. They get to see and hear me every week. They're here to talk about you. So, Steve, talk to us about your early part of your career. Super interested in the door-to-door experience that you had, because that's not something that we can get away with a lot anymore. But obviously, you got your start there. And then the team that you've then built under you now to be able to help organizations replace hope with process, with systems. Talk to us a little bit about your sales journey.
Sure. I'm the last person you'd ever think would have gone into sales. Pretty much didn't say a word from first grade through high school. Came time to give book reports, I'd go in the bathroom and throw up. Major anxiety around people. Went to a very expensive business school in Boston and had to actually pay, for college, help my parents not go bankrupt. So answered a job ad. It turns out the job ad was sales. And I had asked them if I had actually had to, you know, talk to people. They told me yes. So I said, well, what would I be selling? And they said, we'll tell you when you get down here.
That's a nice pitch.
I got hired because, you know, I had a pulse and was upright. And so it ended up being Cutco Knives. And so went home, told my parents. They told me in no uncertain terms I was a moron and that it would never work. So I proceeded to start selling knives and did nothing they told me. My system was, you know, tell the truth. I know that's rare for people in sales, but that was my system. Just be honest and tell people why I liked to use the knives. And I started selling tons of knives. That was freshman year of college. By my senior year, was number one in the country with Cutco, you know, from a kid that didn't speak. So did the normal thing that every, you know, person thinks, right, they should do, which is, hey, you're marginally adequate at sales, Steve. Want to be a sales manager? So if you all are listening to this, they don't make the flight attendant the pilot. So
there's a reason. Yeah.
Failed at that miserably till I learned how to lead people. I'm still learning today. Then I went to the insurance company with the duck. Many of you are familiar with Aflac. I spent 13 years with Aflac, somehow made it to number one with Aflac, 60,000 agents. I was the top guy. So that was my career in sales, and still to this day, trying to learn how to better lead, coach, train, inspire my own team, which as of this taping today, it is National Employee Appreciation Day. So I'm sure my team will see this. I love you, appreciate you. And we certainly wouldn't be able to do what we do without them. So that was my background before I started the Sales Collective. And I just saw in the business world a complete lack, again, of not only systems, but science behind the art of selling. And so that's when I discovered Sales DNA right after I had left Aflac. And that's the tool we use now to help people understand what lives up here is what's affecting their ability to execute the sales process. So you can have the best process in the world. If you're a golfer who thinks the ball's going in the water, I don't care what your swing looks like, it's going in the water. So that's what Sales DNA helps people overcome. And that's what we do now and teaching, training, and coaching salespeople and sales leaders around the world.
So this is probably where that conversation with the Marine might come in, because you mentioned two things that I saw time and time again in the military that we had to keep our eye on the ball of if we were going to be successful in these combat missions. One was to actually have a plan for where we were going, not just to walk into a situation and be like, hey, we're here to sell stuff. Well, that's pretty amorphous goal. You know, we need to know what we're here to sell, who we're here to sell it to, how much we're here to sell it for, when the thing needs to be delivered. It's a lot of questions to answer before you just start turning over money for product or service. So then second thing was something you mentioned about the psychology of it all. So being able to study these combat troops, which, you know, they're all men and women, so we're all like upright hominids. We discovered that there was a similarity. A matter of fact, it was exactly the same between the mindset, what was happening internally, biologically. You mentioned DNA. The biological response to stress is the same in combat as it is for people making sales calls. And this blew my mind when we discovered it, that there's a norepinephrine release, there's an adrenaline release, same way that these troops are going into combat, we experience in sales. Which is why we see salespeople having call reluctance, why we see people lock up. And I say we see people, I mean, this has happened to me more often than I'd care to admit, Steve, where I'm on a call and the big deal of the year, this thing's going to, you know, like pay off the house. And I get an objection that I can't overcome. It's like, oh, I'm just frozen in place. I saw that happen on the battlefield too. So I'm super curious to hear your way of dealing with this. How do you take the physiological response and the psychology that we all share and figure out a way to get salespeople to keep their eye, not in the water, but on the court or on the field where that ball needs to go?
So I guess if we look at it from a military standpoint, and we think about what it takes for these amazing men and women to do what they do, and if there was no process, there was just, I don't know, take that hill or something.
Spray and pray,
violated. So it's the same in sports as it is in the military, as it is in sales. So let's take football. Everybody knows football. in an offensive playbook, right? Just offense. There are 11 guys on offense. There are roughly 200, 250 different plays, different runs, different passes, and so on. Every player has to know every route, right? Every block, they got to know them all. If they played a team that had no playbook and their coach just said, I don't know, do one of these, you guys, or something, they would get it.
Run around and try to stop the ball. Just stop the ball. That's all we're asking. Yeah.
8 out of 9 salespeople. So 8 out of 9 companies, roughly, 8 out of 9 salespeople have no sales process. There is no playbook. All they're trying to do is get open. And if that's your plan for the day is just sell stuff, that's why it's not working. Another one that most people would probably understand, which I think is the easiest to share as an analogy, is the incomparable Bob Ross. We all know Bob Ross. He's more famous today than he was when I was a kid. And Bob Ross, by the way, former military, was able to teach millions of people how to paint. Millions of people. With about this much artistic ability. So how did he do it? Guess what? A system. See, when you take people with no talent and teach them a system, their performance goes up. When you take people with talent and ability and teach them a system, their performance goes way up. But when you take people with lots of talent and put them into chaos, their performance decreases. And so that's the key to really making sure you're maximizing your ability as a salesperson and as an organization. You've got to give people the tools for them to succeed. And then you can't blame them if they don't succeed because you didn't give them tools. So that's just one piece. But the thought, like you said, certain things we look for in our women and men in the military, it's the same inside of sales DNA. So you have 33 years of data. We've tested 2.25 million salespeople. And what we know is that if certain traits are not present, that this person will never, not maybe, not kinda, will never become a top performer. And some of those things, one of them is called the need to be liked. This is present in almost, again, ironically, 8 out of 9 salespeople. And if you need to be liked, guess what? You'll give away the farm. You'll discount, you'll sign bad deals, you won't challenge your prospects. Rejection proof is another one. This is not how we handle rejection. It's really recovery from rejection. So again, another sports analogy, you're a quarterback, you throw a pick six in the first quarter, and then you fumble and you go down 14-0. Can you erase that from your memory and recover and throw 3 touchdowns in the second half? What we found is the salespeople that cannot do that are never top performers. So that's just 2 out of probably 180 things we measure. But if you don't know you have those hindrances, how would you ever fix it? Which is why generic sales training doesn't work. You have to understand what are the hindrances preventing people from performing. And then we train, teach, and coach those people on those hindrances. Because some people don't need to be liked, but they've got a huge issue with selling the way they buy. You got to fix it.
And you mentioned something there that I think is so critical that most of us miss, which is if I have a really bad sales call, I get shut down. There's a lot of internal stuff going on, and I feel shame, I feel guilt. If the man or woman yelled at me, which happens on sales calls or in sales meetings, I get thrown out of the office. That could ruin the rest of my day. And I know salespeople that will have a one bad experience like that, and their call block is then shot. They're showing up just depressed. I got 50 more calls I got to make, but life sucks now. So I'm curious, because this is something that we haven't addressed here on Bulletproof Selling.
Yeah.
Where do you see salespeople relying on hope that they'll just magically be able to recover after a bad sales call, knowing that they've got more to make that day, more meetings to attend, but one just gets totally thrown out the window? Where do you see salespeople hoping that they'll just figure out how to recover instead of having a system in place to make that happen?
So I'll answer this in a couple ways, but believe it or not, it's not the system that will alleviate that hindrance. The reason that most salespeople rely on hope and or, right, that a lot of clients, our customers and companies are not happy with the results they're getting is because this is a much deeper rooted issue, which is called attachment. If you think about this in terms of a hoarder, y'all have seen hoarders before. What, that's not a cleanliness problem they have in their house. That is an attachment problem, meaning they cannot detach from stuff. And the single biggest hindrance we see in salespeople is that they're attached to outcomes. The single biggest hindrance we see in business owners is that they are attached to outcomes. The single biggest hindrance in athletics is they are attached to outcomes. And I learned this too late in life, but I've got to thank Mr. Abraham Maslow for his amazing wisdom. Forget about hierarchy of needs. What Maslow taught me was the only way to truly be happy is to be free from any outcome. And the second you learn that, your sales will improve. Because guess what? You can't control it anyway.
But I am there to make a sale, right? I have a job. These people are paying me to achieve an outcome. They'd like for it to be a sale, but the law of averages states that I'm not going to close a deal on every call. So how do I then begin to justify my time and maybe the base that I'm getting? And of course, I'd love to earn commissions on a sale, but they're paying me for something. How do I then justify not showing up needing to make a sale?
So what they don't understand from a leadership perspective is the same thing that amateur golfers don't understand. If you take a professional golfer, they focus on one shot, this shot, this shot, not what I did on two when I dumped it in the lake, not the 17th green. Oh my God, it's an island green. What am I going to do? This shot. That's why professional safe par, amateurs triple bogey from the same spot. This shot. And if you focus on this shot and executing this shot and you execute these shots as good as you can, you'll win tournaments. If you focus on winning tournaments, you will choke. That's why golfers choke. That's why salespeople choke, because they're focused on winning the sale, other people, all those things, as opposed to executing what's in front of them, because that's all they can do. Is execute this shot, this demo, this phone call. What that person does is irrelevant. It's what I do that matters. It's just like in baseball, we call them quality at bats, right? We call them DPRs, right? Daily performance indicators, not KPIs. KPIs are stupid. DPIs is what matters. Daily performance.
So Steve, would you say that we're then breaking down a larger goal into micro objectives, into saying, you know, maybe there's 50 steps that need to happen between now and the sale, and I really need to be focused on the next one. Is that what you're proposing?
Yeah. That's in essence, right? So if it was a 50-step sales process and you did reverse engineer it, which a lot of teams do, all I know is I've got to dial that phone 63 times today. Or I've got a post on LinkedIn 11, whatever your DPIs are, and they're different for every salesperson. But the only thing you can control is immediately what's in front of you today. And that's it. And that's why you should just focus on that and be happy. This is the main reason why quotas don't work. I mean, this is one of 10,000 reasons why they don't work, because this is not how the human brain works. This is not how physiology works. This is not how our emotions work. If you're a salesperson and you are constantly under pressure, you perform worse, just like kids, just like the military, just like athletes at the free throw line. If you are not under pressure and you feel free and the only thing you focus on is what I'm doing right now, you get better results. That's just science, but that's not how companies understand it to be, which is why most salespeople don't hit their goals.
Because we're too focused on the, you know, knocking it out of the park, right? And I just heard yesterday that baseball is won through a succession of base hits, rather than one home run that allows us to get, you know, four home runs at it. You know, or I'm terrible with sports analogies. My wife will tell you that. Four
You're on the right track. It's funny. Yeah. We're doing a webinar coming up, right? It's Moneyball for Sales, but it's actually a succession of quality at bats, not hits.
There it is. Yeah.
Because if I make you throw 40 pitches and I strike out on the 41st pitch, who cares?
Yeah.
I'm the single most important person in the game because their best pitcher will now be in the dugout in the fifth inning. But if you looked at the box score, which some people call a CRM, if you looked at the box score, you would have missed the single most important player in the game, and his failure in your eyes is what allowed your team to win the game. But you missed it because he didn't get a hit. So that's what salespeople have to understand is I can have a quality at bat and not make a sale, and it still advances our position as a brand, a company, my name, my reputation. Maybe they call me back in 6 months. Maybe they call me back in 2 years. But if you do this always be closing crap, they're never calling you back ever. So we know
you're destroying it. So let's actually build a sales system around this, Steve. I think this would be critical. It's something we've never covered, but it's so massively important to being able to have a bad call and then get on the next call and still be able to move your ball down the court. So let's build a sales system on how to make sure that every sales call is successful, because we're taking back control of our sales process, not leaving it in the hands of a prospect to say yes or no to a sale or even yes or no to the next meeting. Because I know that you and I agree on this, I can already tell, even if they end the sales process right there, they say, I'm not a good fit for you, we're never gonna buy, that's still a win because it frees me up to do other things with my time to pursue prospects that might be a good fit. So when we talk about sales systems here, Steve, we use an acronym because acronyms full of stuff in the military, and I know in your world as well. So we use the acronym TRIM when we're building sales systems, because we're trimming hope away from our sales strategy with every new system. So the T in TRIM is the trigger element. If I'm going to trigger a process or a system that's going to make sure on my next sales call that I maintain control of success, whether that sale happens or not, whether we advance it through the pipeline or not, I'm still in control and I can still measure success. When do I need to trigger this system? Is it right before I pick up the phone? Is it way earlier when I'm researching prospects? Is it earlier than that when I'm developing an ICP? Where do I trigger this system so I know I'm now engaged in something that helps me maintain control of the sale?
It's probably all of those at some degree. But I would say it's when we wake up. You know this from the military about, listen, Jocko has a same thing, but some people make their bed, some don't, right? But it doesn't have any effect on whether or not they're successful in sales. However, what that system is, right, depends on your skills, your strengths, your abilities. So we build them individually for each person. And so, for example, let's just say, and they've got to go knock doors, or they've got, I do is build my list for that day and make sure I've got 25 new prospects on the list. So I'll have a system to build the list. So I'll make sure, okay, are they my ICP? Are they in my geography? Do they have the demographics, psychographics I want? Am I starting with the right people? And then we call them DPIs, but there are specific things we have to do every day. Did I do my reading? Did I do my 15 minutes of training? And did I execute the call properly? What does an executed call look like, a properly executed call? I prepared. I was on the Zoom 5 minutes before. I connected with them on LinkedIn. Whatever their system is, there are qualifications that make this a quality call, and, or Zoom or Knock or whatnot, demo. And if I checked all the boxes, that's all I can do. That's it. And so people feel happy at the end of the day because they executed their system. See, this is the biggest hindrance. And again, I hate to go back, but golf is such an easy one. I could stripe a ball. I mean, completely crush it right on the club face, kill it, right? It's going 350 down the middle. It hits a sprinkler head and bounces left into a bunker under the lip.
Yeah.
Did I execute the shot? What do sales managers and CEOs and owners say?
Oh, they say no, absolutely. They say no. Go in the hole. Yeah.
What? That's how salespeople feel every single day of the week, of the month, of the year. Good luck trying to hit that next shot out of the bunker.
Yeah.
This is what they don't understand. So I can have a perfect demo, a perfect phone call, a perfect podcast. I do a lot of speaking, right? A perfect, you know, keynote. Maybe people don't call me back. Whatever. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But I'm going to give it my best every single time. And that's all that matters. And if I feel good that I did a good job and did what I was supposed to do, let the chips fall where they may.
So it sounds like the trigger then is to define for ourselves what does great look like if it's only things that we can control, right? So to make sure I got my pre-call stuff done, I'm on the call with my checklist, with my script, if that's what my company requires me to use, all the things that I've been ordered to do from a military analogy, and then to execute on those to the best of my ability and to leave everything else up to what needs to happen afterwards, which we can absolutely have a process for follow-up, for lessons learned. We've got plenty of that.
Yeah, did I get a meeting set up, right? Did I, you know, connect with them? Did I make sure I did my screen share? Did they walk through the demo? Did I show them the right clicks in the software? What does your perfect at-bat look like? You know, did I swing at a bad pitch?
Let's talk about that next, because we've got the trigger element, which is defining the things in my control. The R in trim is making this thing repeatable. Now, given the fact that I give you a really wide net, we could have really honed this into what do we do just during a demo, but I asked you to address this for basically the entire sales process, for maintaining control of the things that I can control. So if I'm making that repeatable, what do I need to make sure that I do maybe four or five steps in order every single time that might look a little different depending on where we are in the sales process with any given prospect? But what are the four or five things that I need to set out ahead of time to make sure that I'm defining the things that I can control to know that at the end of the day, whether I sold anything or not, I'm still successful?
I'll give you one, and it's another R. So here's your R. Repeatable. Technically, it's two. Role play.
Yeah. Ah.
I loved Kobe, and, you know, still sad to see, you know, what's happened with him. But I saw Kobe on a podcast probably, I don't know, 8 years ago. He was the best player in the world. And the host asked him, Kobe, why are you the best player on the planet? And Kobe said, because I never get bored with the basics.
Mm.
Plain and simple. Kobe was in the gym three times a day, 2 hours a day. He was in there more than you. Okay. He was practicing more than you. He didn't have more talent than you. He just worked harder than you. But he would shoot that follow-away elbow jumper 1,000 times. So he knew in the game that it was repeatable. It was muscle memory, which is just like pro golfers, right? It's all muscle memory and repeating the swing. It's not the swing that matters, because if you know anything about golf, all these women and men have different swings, but they can repeat it perfectly every time, which is why if y'all want to look up Jim Furyk, okay, who's in the Golf Hall of Fame, he's the only guy to ever shoot 58 and 59. You would never teach his swing in a billion years to your kids. Never, ever, ever. But it works for him. And he can repeat it under pressure and on the first tee of the tournament. So that
sounds like making this repeatable is looking at what are the basic elements of success for this thing that I'm about to do, whether it's to make that initial call or to conduct research or to pitch my demo, whatever that looks like. Just define really basically ahead of time. This is something I see very few salespeople do. If I do these five things, that'll be considered a success, right? And the sales manager can then wave off on it. Yep, roger that. If you do those five things, then you continue to have a job here, no matter what that prospect does or doesn't do. Now, those five things might require you to step your game up, because a lot of salespeople maybe are not competent in doing all five of those things. But like you said, that's where that role play comes in. So I want to hear more about that role play. Talk to me about that.
So it doesn't matter necessarily what it is you do, but it could be a phone call. It could be a demo. It could be a trade show. It could be a discovery meeting. Whatever aspects of your sales process are specific to you, those are the things you want to work on. So you can work on them in a couple ways. One, with your sales leader who should be working on these things with you anyway. Or two, record yourself. You know, we have every Tom, Dick, and Harry who has no problem recording themselves dancing for some TikTok challenge, but they won't record themselves doing their demo or what's the hook when they make a call. You have to practice this stuff and watch it back. Why do you think professional athletes watch 10, 15, 20 hours a week of game film? They make 30 million. They watch 15 hours a week. You don't make 30 million. You don't watch a minute.
Right. There's a correlation there that should be there, but it isn't. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. And who said you don't have to make 30 million, but if you make 100 grand now without role playing, just take a guess how much more successful you think you would be if you did.
This is something that I've done myself when I coach sales teams, and I'm sure you do it as well, to have a salesperson that you're working with one-on-one or a sales team to submit their best and worst calls of the week, the recordings. And if it's the best call, I want to know why it's the best call. If it's the worst call, before I begin to assess it, I want to know what you think you could have done better, because it's probably going to be the same thing that I'm going to say, plus maybe one or two other items. But by doing that, then we begin to self-assess. And of course, knowing what's wrong is step one, but knowing how to fix it and actually make it better is step two. So that's where we're going to move into the I in this this TRIM acronym, which is trigger, repeatable. The I is improvable. So if I've assessed what are the things that I can control in my trigger, and now I know for making it repeatable, I've got to map out the basics. I've got to record myself. I've got to role play. How do I improve this thing month over month, year over year, so that I know I'm continuing to redefine what are the things in my control? Because I know you and I both know salespeople that have been in the industry for decades. They're at the top of their game. Their sphere of control is a bit larger than a brand new salesperson that maybe just can remember the first openings, you know, part of a script. Well, that master salesperson can go for an hour in a demo and they know everything like they're playing the piano as a masterful musician would. So how do I improve this so that I'm continuing to expand my sphere of control?
So it's still the R, still role play, but also it's consistency versus intensity. So if we talk about training, and this is really easy because everybody does this. Everyone on the podcast, you brush your teeth. I know you do, at least most of you do. You're supposed to brush your teeth, right? Two or three times a day for 2 minutes a time. What you cannot do is, you know, stop for like a year. And then just one weekend, you just go nuts and you brush for 24 hours straight. And you go to the dentist and he looks at your mouth and tells you you need a mouth transplant. And then you say, oh, no, Mrs. Dentist, that can't be right. And she says, what do you mean? And you go, well, I spent the whole weekend brushing.
And she 700 times to make up for that whole year. Yeah.
And you go, well, I had to make up for it. I caught up. You can't do that. This is why, and listen, whoever y'all follow and like is fine. But this is why, you know, weekend event, rah-rah BS sessions don't work. Only the hosts get rich. You cannot train with intensity, just like you can't brush your teeth with intensity. If your kids brush their teeth 10 times harder this morning, it won't make them cleaner. It's consistency that makes the difference in how people improve. And that's why we teach 15 minutes a day. That's it. 15 minutes a day of whatever you want to do. Could be working on your value prop or your demo or whatever. That's 3% of a salesperson's day. 3%. And when the average adult is on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, all that crap for 2 hours a day, that's the average length of time a US adult is on social media. You can do 15 minutes to improve your craft. That's how you improve.
And add it up week over week, year over year, makes you one of the top performing salespeople in your industry. And this is, it's funny you mentioned this, exactly what the military does. Every single day, there's a massive portion of our day dedicated to training. Because we realize somewhere along the way, the more we bleed in training, the less we bleed on the battlefield. And salespeople's the same way. I'd rather make the mistakes in my role play, in my training with my team, than on the line with a prospect that I work 6 months to get a conversation with. So I love the idea of doing that to improve. Now, the M in TRIM, the final bit of this, is the measurement. That's what M stands for. If I'm taking the time to map this out, to define it, to take 15 minutes every day that I could be calling or I could be updating my social media, my LinkedIn, my TikTok, I need to justify the use of this time in this new area. So what am I measuring to make sure that I'm actually increasing the things in my control and hopefully seeing improvement in my pipeline as a result of it? What would you recommend? So, leading indicators, lagging indicators? Curious to get your thoughts.
So that comes back to the KPIs versus DPIs thing, right? Most companies or people that measure KPIs, they're measuring lagging indicators. Sales is a lagging indicator. You learn nothing by measuring sales. What you learn is what caused the sales to happen. Now, it's not every time, it's just math and science. If I do these three things, it's more likely that they buy. If we know that 83% of prospects that get into stage four convert, okay, how do we get them into stage four? Well, how do we get them from stage three to four? So what percentage of our prospects are we getting from three to four? If that's the bottleneck, that's what needs to be measured and that's what needs to be fixed. So let's say we're struggling to get them from stage three to four. Well, now we're looking at commonality of deal, right? What happened to cause these deals to either fall out or advance? And then what are the things that drive that stage change from three to four? And again, maybe it is execution of a demo in 30 minutes or less. We found that if our demos are more than 30 minutes, they fall out of there. So we have to know what metrics to measure. But you can't do that without looking at the daily activities that drive each of those measures. And that's what I think companies and salespeople miss all day long. And once you find that thing, you dedicate everything you can to improving that thing. That is what athletes do, golfers do, Broadway performers do. They find that one thing and they get really good at that. And they know if they get good at that, it will lead to better performance.
And that's what DPI stands for, Daily Performance Indicator?
Daily Performance Indicator. Yes, sir.
And okay, I want to make sure I understand that acronym.
And we've taken that, and then we also created this thing now we call the Daily 100, but we've now gamified it. So it's a point system. So we don't care if my team sells some or does. I don't care. Did you get your 100 points today? And each thing is worth a certain point value. So for example, a dial, that's only 1 point, right? You sent out 5 thank you notes, right? That's 5 points. You did your LinkedIn activity, which is made up of like 5 or 6 things. That's 15 points. You had a meeting with a decision maker. That's 30 points. You sent out a proposal. That's 10 points. Everything in every company is different. But if I'm in sales and I know I hit my 100 points today, how do I feel when I go home to my family?
I imagine a lot better than you would if you only judge success by, did I sell something?
That's why you don't measure results, right? And so I'm going to go home to my family, be present for them, and then I'm going to come to work the next day happy. And my only focus is 100 points. That's it. And I know if I keep getting 100 point days after 100 point days, guess what will magically happen? And that's
progress,
the difference.
That result.
Yes, yeah. That's what the companies want. So they want results, but you can't chase results to get results.
So I hope everybody's hearing and seeing what Steve is talking about. He's talking about developing a philosophy of activity, and it's entirely based on leading indicator activity. Steve didn't mention that you get so many points for making a sale because it's all the things that lead up to the sale are the things that we can control. And if we do earn the right things every single day, just like that professional athlete, just like that Marine Corps scout sniper, you're doing the training, you're going to make the shot, you're going to be in the right place at the right time, not because you happen to drop in at the right moment, but because of all of the activity you did to place yourself there. Week over week, month over month, year over year. So great sales system, Steve. Thanks for building that with us. And I want to make sure I give people a way to get in touch with you because you and I had talked about something that you have that's very special that does normally have people have to pay money for, but you're willing to offer it to Bulletproof Selling listeners if they're willing to get in touch with you and begin the process. So talk to us about that sales DNA test that you mentioned and how people can get deeper into your world.
Sure, thanks, sir. Yeah, so easy way, y'all, connect on LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. I love meeting new people. Happy to connect with y'all on there. Sales DNA test is the ultimate tool that we've found that helps people identify these hindrances. And then we built training on how to fix those. And so how we do it now with all of our clients is if somebody's excited, willing, wants to get better and learn, we'll let them do the DNA for free as long as they can help us, right, get in a conversation with their sales leader so we can then get that salesperson the help and the training they need from what we found on their DNA. And almost all sales leaders are generally open to this conversation because guess what? They want their people selling more. They just don't know how to do it. So I'd love to help in any way, shape, or form. And thanks again, Sean. Really appreciate the opportunity to share. And, you know, we're both on the same team here, right? We just want to help people become more successful, help more clients and customers. And if we do that, then everybody wins.
It's amazing. And so to get in touch with you, LinkedIn is the best channel?
LinkedIn's easy. Thesalescollective.com. That's another easy way you can reach out to us. And I'd be happy to, again, help in any way we can, but I appreciate the time and so excited to keep sharing, you know, this message of, you know, the ABC, which is always be conscientious, right? Not to
close. I like that. I like that. Amazing, sir. Well, for all of you, watching, for all the Bulletproof Selling folks, if you're not subscribed to our channel on YouTube, every one of these great conversations is archived there. You're talking about that 15 minutes a day of training. You've got hours and hours of content there from brilliant people just like Steve. If you're listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere that podcasts can be found, best thing you can do for us there is leave us a review. It helps other people get spun up on the fact that they don't have to rely on hope anymore, that it is possible to be bulletproof. And of course, for any of these sales systems, like the one that you heard Steve and I build today, if you want the written form of that, they're all absolutely free over at bulletproofselling.us, where no matter where you're struggling in your sales cycle, there's probably a system that myself and a guest have built for you that you can access there absolutely free. Well, Steve, thanks again so much for sharing your wisdom with us here at Bulletproof Selling, serving the sales community as you and I know love to do. Let's get out there and make selling bulletproof.
Thanks, man. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Appreciate you, Sean.